So people don't change for someone else. It's improving your relationship is not a bartering system. You know, I think there's been this error in pop psychology around fixing up relationships. So if I can value that about myself instead of wishing I could be something else, and then when you value yourself, so much easier to value someone else. Stop judging, right?
Welcome to the Everyday Epigenetics Raw, Real, Relatable podcast. I'm your host, Susan Robbins, epigenetic human performance coach. This is where we discuss all things lifestyle, environment, food, exercise, work, mind, and social interaction as they pertain to epigenetic expression in a way that's relatable to everyone. So if you're ready to start viewing you as an individual, take control of your life and health and get results, buckle up. Here we go. Welcome to the Everyday Epigenetics Raw, Real, Relatable podcast. I'm your host, Susan Robbins, and boy, are you guys in for a treat today. We are going to be talking relationships, one of my favorite things to talk about. And with me today, I have just a fabulous guest that I'm so excited has agreed to come on and talk with me today. Her name is Anne Larson, and I met through my PH360 course back in early 2020. Anne is the director of coaching for PH360. She has a degree in social work. She is a family therapist, certified family therapist, certified health and wellness coach. She is responsible for educating health professionals and creating courses on relationships and behavior change. So trust me, when I say we're going to talk relationships today and bring some epigenetics into it, this is my guru, and she is everything mind. So when I have any questions about mind, Anne is my go-to. She's fabulous. Again, we're going to get raw and real. So you don't know what might come up today. So just be prepared. And I'm so, so happy to have her with me. So Anne, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me here, Susan, because it never ceases to amaze me how much people don't really talk about relationships, not in a real way. They don't talk to others. They don't talk to each other about their relationship. Like, I often get shocked with a couple in a session. Wow, they just don't know that about each other. So it's really terrific to be able to come on and have this conversation with you.
And that's no matter how long they've been together. Some don't know. Oh, yeah. Decades in, right? It's not, yeah. not just new relationships.
No.
Yeah. So
they don't know. They don't know some of the very important things.
So what do you feel? Because I just want to jump in here and start talking. We've been talking before we even hit record for like the last 20 minutes. And I'm just all fired up on this stuff. So I say we just dive in. So what do you see that's important for people to understand when trying to better the relationships they're in, whether they are newer relationships or they're relationships they've been in for a while?
Yeah, there's a few themes that have really come up because I've been a therapist for 40 years, and I've been probably seeing, you know, couples for, you know, 30 to 35 of those. And there's some real themes. And one thing I see all the time is that people will come in, and when you see someone on their own and you'll ask them, you know, what are you here for? Or what would you like from this conversation? They'll say, well, I am this or I am that, or this is happening in my life. I would like to improve this, or this is difficult. They'll say that. When you're in a room with two people, they come in and you ask them those questions and they say the same thing. Oh, yeah, well, I'm not that happy with this. I'd like this to be better, blah, blah, blah. And then they just point the finger at each other and say, and they need to be better so I can be better. Right? That's the first theme. So what's really important is that we have this. So first of all, people don't really change for someone else. Right? These themes go in together. So people don't change for someone else. It's improving your relationship is not a bartering system. You know, I think there's been this error in pop psychology around fixing up relationships. Oh, do this for each other, compromise. But often when you compromise in a relationship, you just have two people not being who they are and not being happy. And I hear you, Susan, you talk a lot about this idea of, you know, being authentic, being who you are, being really in touch with that. Well, often what happens is that people think, well, if I'm giving this to my partner, then they'll give me this, and then they'll give me this, and they'll give me this. And then you have these two really dissatisfied people, right?
Sure.
Who thought they were doing everything right because they were compromising. But it's not bartering. We can't barter who we are. And in fact, when we get to this part of the conversation, I'll say, I did all these years of being a therapist up to about 8 years ago. I didn't know really why that was. And now I know, which is the epigenetic piece. I know why we can't go past certain parts of ourselves, why we have a way of being, parts of our way of being that we can't change. So we can't really change for someone else. So unless that person decides, I will be happier, the world will be happier if I can be like this, then you've got some beautiful room for change, right? So it's not bartering. But also the other thing is people have this expectation of, it's like, right, you're in front of me, but I'm viewing you like you're a bit of an avatar that I can click into place to make my perfect person, right? So it's like, oh, what do you, and I think it's probably made worse. You know, people do up a profile or whatever. Oh, you know, I'm this and I'm this, all that sort of
swipe,
stuff.
swipe.
Yeah. So then, so you get this idea, oh, I can just like choose. I like this characteristic. I like this piece of a personality and I'll just pop those together. But actually what we know, and we know through epigenetics, is that groups of characteristics walk together. And again, I knew this was a phenomena. I just didn't understand why until I found PH360. So people will say things like, I love how my partner, they love connecting with me. I love how they hold my hand. They're wonderful. But I wish they would just be more successful in their career, mm-hmm. you know, or the opposite. Oh, I love how my partner provides, you know, like we have this great lifestyle. My partner really goes for it. They're always progressing. But you know what? They don't stop very long to actually care about me, or why aren't they being more involved with the kids or whatever? So you can see we have this phenomenon where people think, oh, someone can be this and this and this and this. And honestly, which we'll get to, people really can't be all of those things.
Truth.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most valuable things I've learned along the way was, if you want to see change around you, it comes from within you, right? Yeah. So when you're saying you can't change for someone else, I agree 100% with that, because when you try to change to please someone else, that takes you away from your authentic self, and that you don't see that behavior change around you with the people, right? And from what I hear in my coaching, as people start to understand each other more, and I think this is what you're getting at, so correct me if I'm wrong, is when they start to understand themselves more and start looking inward for change, or for that bringing the authentic self forward, instead of looking for their partner to be who they want the partner to be, because they think that's who they want, because they're not authentic in who they are.
Yes. And what happens is then we think that other people, we sort of think other people need to fill up our gaps for us, right? I'm feeling, especially when I know emotions, you know, I'm feeling emotionally distressed. So your job then should be to sort out my emotional regulation, right? I want you to be there for me. But you know what you're saying when you're saying that? You're saying, I can't be there for myself.
Exactly.
I don't know how to be there for myself, so I want you to do it. But this is just another imperfect human like you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just as triggered as you are. Why would you expect them in that moment to be able to somehow pull themselves up by their bootstraps and be in some beautiful meta awareness where they can totally be there for you?
Right.
So much better when we can understand that. But what's interesting about that, Susan, when you say about being yourself, is that there's these two elements with identity. There's like who we think we are, like our construction of our identity, but it's also then how you feel about that. That's what we think about as the esteem. So if you are being a way that you would feel is natural for you, but if you've grown up in an environment that doesn't value that, well, then you don't value that yourself, right?
Right, right.
And that actually then puts you in a more difficult, then you've got two people with that stuff coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is that if you can actually be on each other's side, so that's the other theme, you know, when I ask people about intimacy. So I'm going to want to have a conversation about intimacy. First of all, it doesn't matter how old they are, everyone starts laughing.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the reactions? I bet are all over the board.
Nervous giggling almost always occurs because everyone thinks I'm going to talk about sex straight away. And of course, I am going to talk about sex, but I'm not going to talk about it first, right? I'm going to talk about all forms of intimacy, you know, emotional intimacy, physical intimacy, sexual intimacy. You know, we're going to talk about all of that. But when I ask them about that and we get into that conversation and everyone stop giggling and they've got to think about, you know, what is it that I, what makes me feel really good? And you could also be thinking, what makes me feel safe? Like, what makes me, because that's the answers I get is like, actually, this person has my back. You tend to get that. It's like, if some other things are going wrong in the world, I could come back to this person and they could be there. But, you know, a relationship really needs to grow for that to happen, because if you are in the, if you're in the process of expressing something that you feel like you want support for, but actually it's triggering them, or it's maybe it's really something that they are just not good at doing and you're asking them to do that, that is actually really, really complex. Because then what happens to someone who feels like the person they love is asking for something that's really hard for them to give? Like, what reaction do you think that person's going to have?
Oh, yeah, it's not going to be good.
It's not going to be good, right? They're going to get angry. They're going to have like some guilt and some, depending on, and you know, we can talk about this epigenetics, different people go to different spaces.
Oh, yeah, we're getting into that next.
But, you know, it could be straight into anger, but it could be things like, you know, guilt and shame because I feel like I can't be there for you. So all those complexities start to happen. And really, so you're right. I mean, we know that to be emotionally intelligent, to be able to manage relationships, first of all, to be able to be aware of someone else, and then to be able to manage that, you have to have that. Of course, you have to have that self-awareness first. But Susan, self-awareness is hard.
It is. It is. I see that all the time as well. People just don't. And I love seeing the awareness grow throughout a coaching program.
Yes.
It is just such a beautiful thing when someone has these, and their big epiphanies could be a little one that's hugely impactful. And like we kind of referred to back in the beginning, then you're actually seeing the change around you and you see others start to change around you when you start to have more awareness and bring that authentic soul that you have, how you're created into the relationship dynamic instead of looking outside for it.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we have when we have the epigenetic lens. It's a very, if I say a hack, it sounds too superficial, but it actually is a hack because it's hard to know ourselves because what we're born with this, we're born with a self. We're not a blank slate, right? We're born with neurobiology and we all have a different neurobiology, but then we all have a completely different environment. There's so many subtleties in how we interact with the environment. So then out of all of that, we get a sense of who we are, but who we are, who we think we are. Look, we only sort of know who we think we are, right? Because we've got this amazing brain. It just makes shit up all the time.
Some more than others do.
Yes. Oh, that happened? Oh, that was because of that. And in fact, we know this in relationships, interesting, from some work done called attribution theory, that if a relationship's going well and the person does something that's they're not happy with, they'll think, oh, look, you know, they're a great person, I love them, but they're under stress or this happened and that happened, so they get a bit of a free ride, like it's okay that you did that. If the relationship's not going well, so even that person might have said the same, so let's say they say the same thing, if you'll attribute that motivation, if things are going well, you go, actually, they're still a good person, it's okay, they just like glitched out for a minute. But if the relationship's not going well, then you attribute a completely different motivation. You go, oh, that's because you're this. I mean, who hasn't had a fight where they've with their partner and finger pointed about you are this and you are that? You know, even though if anyone's ever done a parenting course, you know, you never do that, right?
You just, or use the always. You always do this.
Mm-hmm. You don't catastrophize. You don't totalize. But anyway, of course, that happens.
Sure.
Because if things aren't going well, then we attribute motivation differently. And that is a massive part of a relationship working well or not. And this is also where epigenetics come in. Because if you understand that person's general way of being, it's actually going to change the way that you attribute motivation. You're not going to so much think, that person just did that to get at me, or they know that I like this or wanted that and they didn't do it. When you actually understand, when you've got the epigenetic lens, it really helps with that.
It's interesting because people say they should have known this about me. They should have known that I like this or want this or don't want this, that I'm like this. We're expecting our partners to be mind readers instead of communicating.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the time we don't know ourselves like we think we do. But tell me, how has this epigenetic lens we're talking about now, or you're just starting to get into, how has that changed how you view working with relationships and people, whether it's individuals, couples? Bring the epigenetics into it now.
Okay. So I have a funny little story about a really good friend of mine. This is before I found PH360. So this example of what I understood after compared to before. And even though we're all grown up, for some reason this conversation happened, which was, if you were a dog, what sort of dog would you be, right? And people were saying, you know, different things. I'd be this sort of dog or that sort of dog. I wasn't quite sure, to be honest, what sort of dog I would be. But my really good friend's partner said, I would definitely be a husky. And I would be a husky because I don't care about adversity. I love to have a job. I want to move forward. I want to succeed. I don't mind working hard. And I don't care if I'm uncomfortable, right? Now, you know what I'm describing, but you couldn't knock me over with a feather, right? Because in my health type, which is a diplomat that Susan knows, we love pleasure and comfort. Now, I've been this was about 10 years ago, but nevertheless, I've still been a therapist for 30 years. I was like, what? You don't care about comfort. All these pennies start to drop. Oh, that's why people can do all those things that I would never do, because it would just be too horrible and uncomfortable to me. So we had it was a real epiphany for me that someone could be so different from me. That's what you're saying. We don't know. We are all constantly projecting onto other people, ourselves, because that's what we know. We know ourselves. And I still remember that, thinking, wow, so different from me. Now, of course, since the epigenetic lens, what I know is that this guy's a crusader.
And
a crusader wants a job. They're going to keep progressing. They're going to keep looking forward, and they're going to do that. So that was just my funny story about, you know, I didn't understand it before and now I do. So I think there's sort of 5 points. So just stop me and like just jump in and ask me things. And I think it's really useful to understand about ways of being in your partner and yourself that's quite difficult to change because it's part of your neurobiology, right? And I'm not talking about I did the big 5 personality test or I did the, you know, the like the
Enneagram.
The strengths, the Enneagram or the via strengths, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about having a whole body of knowledge and research based on EEGs and people's physicality that tells us some things about people. And one of those things to start off with is whether you're an introvert or an extrovert.
Okay.
So people think that that's about how out there you are. You know, if someone appears out there, you're an extrovert, and an introvert is someone who's very shy. Now, I could just disillusion everyone here because I am actually an introverted person, but no one would ever guess that when I'm just doing my thing. So what happens is that without going into basically all it means is that introverted people are that way because they've got a lot going on in their brain. They want to shut it down. They want to shut their environment down. And extroverted people don't have as much cortical activity. It's nothing to do with intelligence, right? No, it's nothing got anything to do with intelligence.
No.
And they want stimulation to get it going, right? Now, just straight away here, think about that in a relationship. Just think about that in a relationship. If you've got people together who are an introvert and an extrovert, Can you imagine some of the things that could happen? Like, Susan, have you ever been out with an introvert and or you just avoid them or what?
And it's the story of my dating life. You know, I have been 15 years single, right? And I tend to pick up, not pick up people, not that way. That's good. But I tend to attract people that are more the thinkers, the future, the overthinkers that do tend to be on the more introverted side. Absolutely. Yeah. And I am exactly what you described as being the opposite of that. I'm definitely out there and more in the moment. I'm in the moment. In the moment and spontaneous, in the moment and extroverted. And I tend to attract the very future thinking introverts.
Yes. So it's really interesting, isn't it? That you've also brought up orientation to time, thank you, which was one of the other ones. So some of us, of course, tend to think more in the past, some in the future, some in the now. But you can already see as you're putting that together, what does this mean for this couple? That is like, even let's just say, even orientation to time, that seems like, why would that matter?
But I didn't think it did before either.
Oh, you didn't think it mattered?
I didn't think it mattered before, but yeah, this is huge, people. This is a big one.
Yeah, because it was such a shock to me. So, I'm not sharing huge amounts about myself, but I've been married twice. I'm married. And I've been with my husband for 27 years, a long time. And he's quite a different health type. Actually, that's what I was thinking, Susan. After I tell this story, I want to talk about when people say, is it good to be like each other? Or is it good to be different from each other? Like, we'll talk about that attraction stuff, right? Well, because that's what you're talking about, like what attracts you.
Sure.
So I hadn't really ever been with anyone like my husband before when I met him. And he had lots of wonderful, wonderful things about him. This is what I mean about picking pieces. Like, he's got all these really great things about him that I just loved. But it was so weird because he would never have, like, he'd have deep conversations about certain things, but he'd never want to talk about where have we been and where are we going?
Just like, where you are now, right?
Yeah, just where we are now. I'm like, what? What do you mean? And actually, you know, even without understanding the lens, you know, I've been a therapist for a long time, but I'm not going to start getting cranky and angry about something like that. I'm going to ask some questions and understand that that's who they are. But my goodness, when you get the lens, I go, oh, okay, right. You are one of those in the moment people. we'd go somewhere. We live in the country. So we've got quite a long way. I'm going to do a workshop and he's going to go to some place and find some obscure something to make some furniture. And we get there and it's closed. And I said, well, didn't you ring them? Looks at me. No.
Why should I?
Yeah, why would I ring? Now, you know, in pre-PH360, I would have been, oh, my God, why would we go all this way and travel across this city and you didn't ring? But when you got the lens and you say you're in the moment, and if I expect you to be something other than what your neurobiology is driving you to be, well, then I'm really just asking for trouble. I'm asking for a lot of conflict.
Mm-hmm. And the whole point of trying to make a better relationship is to not have that type of conflict. Disagreements, fine, but not conflict that's based on these types of things.
Yeah, not conflict that leaves you both feeling more damaged, you know, walking away. Of course, you're going to have those misunderstandings. This is this idea that people also say, well, and particularly in our community, when you find out what your health type is, whatever, although today, like, I don't know whether everyone listening is at health types, so I'm trying to keep it more general. So everyone out there can think, am I an introvert or am I an extrovert? Mm-hmm. And what is my partner? That's what I would hope people would at least get out of this conversation, even now, this orientation to time. What am I? Do I like to think about the past? Am I in the present? Or do I want to not feel, do I feel like my past just drags me back and I want to go forward? Like with those going forward people, if you want to talk to them about what went wrong in the past so that you can learn a lesson to take into the future, all you're doing is really making them not engage with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
I would think, as particularly as, like, I became a therapist, which is perfect for a diplomat, love to unpack what's happened to people, right? But I've learned, watch the unpacking. Actually, I'd already developed a therapy style that kind of minimized unpacking unless someone really wanted to do it, right? So, because I just learned from people, right? When I found PhD 6, I didn't go, oh, wow, are people really like this? I just went, oh, you're just explaining my last 30 years and
in a nutshell, you know,
and tens and tens of thousands of clients. You've just explained that to me. So people say, look, you know, what's the best health type for me, or what's important? Is it important to be like someone, or is it important to be different from someone? And with PhD 60 around the circle, you would tend to more say people are more like you if they're close to you on the circle, mm-hmm. and they're more different if they're on opposite parts of the circle. And, you know, it's interesting because there's no answer to that, by the way.
Okay.
There's no answer to who is best for me, because sometimes similarity is great, right? Sometimes it's good. Oh, we're both introverts. Mm-hmm. We both like thinking about the future, or we're both detail oriented. That's nice. So you create a life like that.
Or fun.
Yeah.
Or someone that's fun.
We're both extroverted, or we're both fun. But that's right. What about if instead of that, you're like, I'm quite like this. And gee, it's nice. You can really like piggyback off each other, can't you? Mm-hmm. If you get someone that's complementary, you can piggyback off each other. Now, this is. And Jung talked about this. One of my favorite, you know, ways I used to do therapy. I do some relationship coaching, but not much anymore. A bit busy. But I'd say to people, like with Jung said, what attracted us to people will be what breaks us up in the end, what separates people in the end. And I don't think that's always true, but this is the complementary thing. So let's just say if we have someone who sees you, Susan, and they think, I love how much fun you are. I love how spontaneous you are. I love how in the moment you are. So great. And you're a bit of a risk taker and I'm not. Awesome, right?
You're just totally describing me, Anne.
Yeah, that's right, right? So actually, you and I are on the opposite ends of the spectrum, yeah. Although, to be honest, because we're all different. I have got a spot of you in me anyway.
Sure. I have some Diplo in me too.
Yeah. So, you know, everyone is very unique. Everything. But if someone says, look, I just love all that about you because, you know what, because I am different, that I'm a bit stable, I don't take a lot of risk, I'm not always fun, and you think about me, oh, wow, I love this. You really ground me. I feel so good. I feel safe with you. I feel accepted by you because you're not blowing, you're not going off your brain. You know, I can get up really high either with some anger or some joy, and you're kind of this nice steady flow that I can sort of stay with. We don't take that much risk, but that's okay. You balance me out and you'll come and do some fun things with me. This is the complementarity. But what happens if we don't understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the other thing Jung said that was essential is, but then what's useful is if we actually personally take on some of those other characteristics. And this goes back to my first point, which is we can only change for ourselves.
Yeah.
So if I say, I love that you're so much fun, I'm actually going to make an effort to be more fun, you know, and even though I'll never be as extroverted as you, we'll go and listen to some music, like we'll do this, I'm going to make that part of my life. Because when I saw you, I realized, yeah, fun is good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you might be saying, oh yeah, it's good. I'm going to regulate my emotion a bit more, especially with my partner. It's so much calmer. We get on. I'm really learning to express my feelings in this safe environment. Great. And then you see this couple, beautiful, complimentary, off they go for the next 30 years. Fantastic. Or you have the couple that they don't ever take on any of that themselves. And then they start saying, you are so boring. Why won't you do anything? You're no fun. you're no fun. And then the other person says to you, oh, you're just crazy. And you never stick to anything. Blah, blah. So the behavior is the same, but we're attributing a different motivation to it. And we're attributing a different value to it. Right. And then we have people who can be really different, but it's the same or different, but they'll share value. So, you know, the health type lens is not about values. So you could be really completely different from each other, but you're both environmentalists, or you're both top performance athletes, mm-hmm. or you're both into the natural medicine world, you know, whatever that is.
Sure.
So a lot of your differences are okay because you come together around some joint values, or maybe it's just that we have family values and that's what's really important. We had children together and now we're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some couples that don't have that. They don't even necessarily share a lot in common and they're quite different. And that's challenging.
Absolutely.
You want to really, you know, of course, the end to this is you want to really understand each other better. But for them, then it's about asking, what is it that we give to each other, you know, mm-hmm. to really understand that. And I think I think that's hard to understand if you don't have that health type lens that I'm talking about, because mm-hmm. otherwise, how do you make sense of, like, even energy? Oh, this is so funny. I forgot you and I are the opposite. So another one is how energy conserving versus energy using is that person?
As far as like someone being, and what do we say, an energy vampire? Someone who takes your energy when you have a lot of energy and takes your energy.
No, I just mean, or just someone
energy,
who,
physical energy.
Yeah, someone who just like you, look, you're just the energizer bunny. Let's go.
Until about 7, 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Then I become the hermit.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about that? What about if you're energy conserving, energy using like that, you want to use, like, you've got energy. So I know you've talked about all this stuff before. Like, there's a biological reason for that. You've just got mm-hmm. more access to catecholamines, so noradrenaline, adrenaline, and dopamine, and steroidal hormones. I mean, that's a magic mix, right? For going. Right.
It is. And then when you add a COMTAA in there, which is a very slow breakdown of the catecholamine, so I've got higher levels of all of those. Oh yeah. I'm on fire. And people
you're
don't
on fire.
Yeah, it's finding someone that understands that.
But there's no point in someone saying to you, why don't you just calm down, Susan?
Exactly.
Right.
Because it's not going
to
happen.
Someone has to value that. And that's the other thing I think, I'm giving all my truisms that I've decided over the years. The other one is be really cautious of ever really hooking up with or staying with someone who doesn't value what is most valuable about you.
So you have to believe it too, right? I think, isn't that somewhere where we disconnect because of lack of understanding of ourselves, where we're valuable? And society, all the norms, all the things out there now, social media, where the self-acceptance is in the toilet, right? People pull up Facebook and automatically feel like shit because they're comparing themselves with everybody else. Everybody's filtered. And I heard somebody say, I don't think it was on one of the podcasts I've done, but they were saying how it's all fake, right? Social media is basically fake. People are out there. They have a smile on their face. They have all the filters. The mask is on for what they want you to see. But yet you pull that up first thing in the morning and you automatically start the comparisons going on and on. So you're in the toilet to start the day with some shitty self-esteem.
Then it comes
into this. Yeah. And that's what you're putting out there to a partner.
That's right. That's exactly right. And again, this is the hack, because what we know let's just use that. That's a really good example. Say if you're like, you are the energizing bunny, you're a high energy person. Now, often high energy people have got a message from their environment, their family, which is just calm down, will you? You know, like you're over the top.
You're too much.
You're too much. That's the big one, isn't it?
Too much.
You are too much.
Yep.
So when someone tells you, you're getting that constant message that you're too much, and you go to school and you're definitely too much at school because I want you to sit down and you can't, and you can't talk, you're in trouble, you're too much. So if I believe I'm too much, what does that mean? Well, that means that who I am is not good enough for all those people. So now I have to be something other than I am.
Exactly.
But how hard is it, honestly, to be something other than you are when it's something that's biologically driven?
Oh, it is so taxing.
Yes.
It's so and how many years did we go like this? I mean, I have clients that are young, and I'm so glad when they come to me when they are younger, understanding how they are. But most of us, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, saying, holy shit, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is why I am the way it's my biology. It's my biology. And it becomes, you know, I use that as my little term now, is everything is it's my biology, but it really is. And when you start to have that, I've heard it's validation of things that you felt and have squelched because of the world around you. And that's what you've attracted in relationships. When people say, I'm just done dating, or I'm done with relationships, I'm done with this marriage, I keep attracting the wrong people. Well, think about what you're putting out there. Yeah. If you're putting out an energy of inauthenticity and having that mask on, that's the same kind of things that you're bringing in, because you're not bringing in what's going to be ideal for who you actually are.
Yes. And then it becomes even more complicated, as you and I started to talk about, because when you're first attracted to someone, it has so much to do with dopamine, oxytocin.
I hate you.
Pheromones, endorphins, they're all shaking, right? And so much of that is like, well, I smelt you and I really want to be holding you right now.
Oh, yeah.
I smelt you and I love you. But of course, that, you know, whatever people think that is, you know, they think there might be an evolutionary thing to it, that somehow you might be a good match with someone else that you think smells really good.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get over that initial bit of how good you smell, it's not the dopamine and the oxytocin and the endorphins and the pheromones. They are not what makes a good relationship.
Right.
So I used to see these people, in this case, mostly women, would come in. And they'd say, I really love him, but like it's 4 months down the track, right? Mm-hmm. I love him, but now I'm going to start working really hard on a relationship with someone who is not suited to me at all, because I love him or her. I love them. Well, yeah, you loved the drugs, the natural biological drug. Now that the fog has cleared. And the other thing that's just natural is that when you're in that fog, like in a sense, you put your best foot forward. It's not lying. But, you know, like we were just saying this with you, like say an activator, you know, in the end, someone might think, oh, well, they're too much, but they'll be just really focusing all their energy on that person. And, you know, I know we don't have time for everything, but I'll just take a little detour into sex, which is that an activator, you know, I said full of all those hormones, including steroidal hormones, they're going to be very entranced into the idea of the physical relationship pretty hard, right? Because all those hormones are telling you that's what I do. And then the other person's going to really love that. But then we have to see after that, we can't say again, we can't say, I love how you've got that massive sex drive, but I wish you'd calm down the rest of the time. No, right? This is the package. This is the package that goes together. So I think, I think it's, and if we know, so that's what I would say to everyone. I don't know how many people that listen would actually have a PH360 profile. If you do, that's great, because that's easy, you know, just look that up and see what it says. I've never met anyone in the last 8 years who I've met people who will look at it and think, I don't think that's me. But once we've really looked at it, because like you said, they've got to unpack that little bit, because you've already, what about if you've learned, I can't be who I am?
Right. Right. Put that physical, if you're an activator, that's put the physical aside, maybe through church or family or something saying sex is bad. And here you have all these hormones, like you said, driving you, and yet you temper that. And then
yes.
One day out it comes and you think, I'm bad. This is not me. When it's actually how you're created and it's okay.
Yes. Yes. So it's really good for everyone to think about, well, what do I value about myself? Or, you know, because like I said, it's like, this is my identity and this is whether I value it or not. And this bit, the valuing bit, has all come from the interactions that you've had. So just like some other people that I really feel for in our culture are the people that we call the guardians, but you are the people who are more solidly built. You are slower. You're beautiful, nurturing, kind, but the more stressed you get, the more you slow down, you are stable. Just as much as, you know, you, Susan, are reactive, these people are stable. But what does that mean if you're stable? That means everything about your body and mind wants to keep things the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't go that well with chat when you decide you need to change something.
Nope.
It becomes really hard and a longer process to create that change. So, again, you're in a partnership with that person. Now, it can work really well complementarily. Like, say there's you in a complementary way. If there's you and you're with that person that's the guardian and they're really stable, so you can be as reactive as you want, and they completely accept you. They've got enough stability for everyone.
Yep.
And they completely accept you as you are. You go off, they're like, that's okay. I know, I understand that. Super reactive. I love that, because along with the reactivity comes all the fun.
Mm-hmm.
And left to my own devices, I might spend a bit too much time on the sofa. Right? But now with my activator.
Yeah.
Off we go. We're going for a hike instead. And, you know, they're going to run ahead of me and come. They're going to be probably running back and forth. So I'm just trekking along. But that's what happens with that difference. And if you also then think about, like, in the relationships course that we've created at PH360, you know, we also look at that, the parents thing, because I had a parent who was a mother who was an activator. So one of the messages I got really clearly was, you just don't get on with it. Just
chop, chop, let's go.
Chop, chop, let's go. Right? And if you want to add insult to injury, I had three activated daughters as well.
God. I'm sorry. Their whole life
chop, chopping me as well. Chop, chopping me. But what that is really great at is that once you, this is what's beautiful. Look, I know we should all accept everyone for who they are and we should love ourselves for who we are. I know all that. I've been doing that for years. When you understand your epigenetics, it becomes so much easier, because it says this to me. And time is really important. You need to take your time. When you have time and when you can explore and when you've got time to build this like tree of knowledge and think things through properly, then you're great. So now when people, you know, I remember not that long after I found PH360, I'd gone exercising with one of my activator daughters and we're going back to the car and I'm fiddling around trying to get my keys out of the bag when we get to the car. She's like, hurry up. Right, we're not in a hurry. We're not going.
We're just trying to get the car.
And like, I know I'm slow at those things. Anyway. So it was so great, because I just said, do you know what? If you want to be in a hurry, darling, you hang on to the car keys. Yeah. Right? Right? I don't need to be offended. I don't need to tell her, this is what I'm saying about not expecting other people to be like you. I don't need to say to her, you're always in a rush. Why don't you just slow down? I don't need to make it out as if I'm better than her.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not worse than her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're both just who we are. And in a relationship, that is a powerful position.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter the relationship, whether it's friend, romantic partner, sibling, mother, daughter, father, son, any of it. It's relationships, period. The more you understand about you and other people, is what matters.
Yeah. And the main reason it comes up more with our intimate partner is because, to be honest, we expect more from our intimate partner.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that problem, we expect them to somehow like fill up our holes. But if we can understand ourselves and if we can value some of those core, like, again, you know, we can't, I mean, you've heard the founder of our company who comes from a spiritual point of view. It's really beautiful. It's like, you're not going to pick the wrong body to come to earth in, you know? And if you think of it like that, you are in the right. Isn't it lovely? Like, it's like you're in the right body for what you need to do. Mm-hmm. So if I thought I had to be zooming around and being in the moment and being spontaneous and even like bouldering, you know, doing sports that take you to be fast or be in a job where I need to think really quickly on my feet. Mm-hmm. Well, that's for you, right? That's not for me. But I don't have to think, oh, gee, I'm slow. I just have to think, you know what? I'm really good on a long hike.
Right.
I'm really good as a therapist or, you know, a natural, you know, integrative
healer,
you know, medical person,
sure.
A healer. Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm good at that. Or I'm good doing research or whatever. That's what I do. So if I can value that about myself instead of wishing I could be something else, and then when you value about yourself, so much easier to value someone else. Stop judging, right? Just stop judging and look at that person and stop judging yourself for that. Because again, why do people conflict? Because this person gets triggered and they start saying, I want this from you.
Mm-hmm.
And this person will often feel inadequate. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to do that. They don't know that other person's experience. And then they end up getting upset as well. And then that just escalates rather than being able to say, really good question first is, can, like, what is the capacity of these other people in my life to be there? Like, some people are more self-focused and some people are more other-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can't really say, well, you can, but it's not biologically correct to say, I love it how my partner is such a go-getter. They're constantly out there. They're really successful. They bring in the big bucks. They're leading their field. Why don't they think about me more?
Right. It's your payoff for your little caveat.
It is.
So whether you're in the dating world or whether you are in a relationship, a new one, even a disconnect or one still getting to know your partner of decades, right? Is a good question to ask, because we always think, what do you like to eat? What's your favorite food? What are the things you like to do? The same shit we ask all the time, right? And then you think, then I know this person, everything about them. But I can tell you, and I, like I've said, been in the dating pool a long time, I've never said to someone, what do you value most about yourself? That is a powerful effing question, Anne, that I think like all of us could ask a potential partner or your partner tonight, like to really, if you want to really learn about the essence of someone, ask them what they value about themselves. Like that's what I pulled from this part that I never would have thought of. And I thought I was, but you know, hell, I did investigative work. I thought I was really good at asking questions. I haven't even thought about that one. This is a damn good question, Anne. I love it. But talk about really... Yes. Finding some, and if you have someone that says, I don't know, then they've got a lot of work to do. And you have to know that that's going to be someone that might be a lot harder to work with that may not, if you've been down this road of self-discovery or whatnot, that may be a little bit harder to have someone that really has no clue.
That's the other thing. You know, when people say to me, which of the health types go together better or not, I say, you know, who goes together the best? The more emotionally intelligent you are.
Amen.
You know, the more, so even when you think about balance, none of us should be balanced somehow as humans in the middle. Mm-hmm. We need to be balanced like within ourselves, within our health type as such. So I always think about, you know, as the human tribe has been very successful, right? It's the winner on the planet. Maybe not doing such a great job as the winner, but nevertheless, the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. And that is because we are all different. but we are social beings. We play different roles. So it's really interesting to find out, that's right, what do you value about yourself? What's important to you? Where do you think your talents lie? Like, you do that because there are people along the lines of you, like the hunters, some people need to take risk. How would we have survived trying to move out of one territory into another, or just even doing a dangerous hunting activity, if we didn't have people who naturally took risk? But not only do they naturally take risk, they're fast. They've got the fast twitch muscles. They've got the limbic brain activity. It's far. They're on the fast brain. The fast brain is everything. I make decisions quickly. But if we only had them, well, then there wouldn't be any planning.
Right?
There wouldn't be thinking through what happens behind that. So we need those people to be planning and then to be forward thinking. Into where are we going now? Why bore you with that stupid detail, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're much better off getting on with stuff. Then you also need people who are going to think things through, nurture a community. Like, what about that? What about if everyone was out hunting and no one was at home wanting to nurture?
Mm-hmm.
But none of us are all of those things. And it can be tricky because someone might say to you, what I value about myself is that I'm really, you know, I'm self-aware, but I'm very stable, for instance. And you might look at them and think, if you said that to me, I'd think, oh, I don't know if you're in balance for an activator because you shouldn't be so stable. And that's the advantage of the lens, right?
Right.
Because that person may have been brought up in a family of guardians and learned, what did they learn? You need to be stable, be quiet, modify yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And so there it gets tricky. But I think what would be fun, before I did the relationships course, you know, created it, I had been thinking what would just be fun to do. And you can do this with someone if you're developing a partnership. Do something like just think about what's it like, even as a mock, let's work out a holiday. Let's plan a holiday together or even a date and see the difference. How far away do you think that holiday is going to happen? Is someone planning for next year or are they planning for next week?
Oh, that sounds fun.
Right?
Yeah.
How enthusiastic are they? Do they want to go on an adventure holiday or they want to have a chill out on the beach holiday, right? You get the like introversion, extroversion thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just by how much they're worried about what you want compared to what they want, you know, you find a lot out. Pay attention.
Absolutely.
Pay attention to that.
Here's your homework tonight, people, your relationships.
Like have that conversation because it gives you those clues if you don't have the profile. If you have the profile, then it's pretty easy because you'll see in those profiles that, you know, people who are, you know, they'll talk about people wanting peace and calm compared to people who want adventure or people who like to have time to themselves compared to people who want to have like a lot of social time, and it's all in there. But I think if you think about those factors, then you've got a pretty good little list to go, where are they on that? And it's not yes or no, right? It's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I think they're a bit like this or a bit like that. But, you know, that orientation to time, they were advertising this festival, music festival, and I was with my activated daughter. And I said to her, what do you think about going to that? So it was in a few days' time. It's on every year. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you think about going to that? She said, oh, yeah, let's do it. But are we going to have to be able to get the tickets like in the next couple of days? I said, I'm talking about next year. So I'm just giving those examples of that orientation to time if people don't think that matters. And again, if you understand that about each other, you can have a laugh like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to stay stuck in what you always do. You know, sometimes the diplomat like me might be able to say, oh, okay, all right, fun. Let's do it in four days.
Let's do it
because I'm with someone else who just does it and I know I have fun. Great. And then the activator can say, oh, yeah, there you go again. Okay, 1 year's time, but let's maybe organize. We'll do that in a year, but let's see if we can do something else a bit sooner. So, you know, it's really powerful to understand that.
So time orientation is
so,
a
Time, orientation to time, really important. Whether that person is more stable or reactive, whether they're energy conserving or energizer bunny. Because again, they get called lazy. Energy conservers get called lazy. But that's why I brought up that at the tribe, because this is all through evolution, right? It's not just an accident that this has all happened, because you need energy conservers, because otherwise when the famine came, everyone would be dead.
True.
Right? We need some people to survive, right?
Right.
And
right.
In harsh climates, you need to be able to carry like more body fat. You need to have more muscle and more body fat. And you need to be able to eat, like, you know, you and I have had this. You've seen my genetics, and everything about those genetics is something that makes me be able to eat a lot if I wanted to. That doesn't work in a current culture, right, where food is available every day. So right. I have to manage that. But if I was in the Middle Ages, when there were a lot of diplomats like me, then a lot of women were diplomats. So you needed that because times were tough, right? Mm-hmm. And if you didn't eat, the other thing is, you can give your food to your kids, right? Because I'm not going to fall over. I'm not dying. I can live on the smell of an oily rag, because my body, the less food it has, my thyroid just drops. Everything drops. Put less food in, slow the metabolism down.
Uh-huh.
It's great for evolution. It's not so good when you look at social media.
Right.
Right, but right. It's there for all these things are there for a reason. They're all really important. But like, so, and then there's the other focused and self-focused and the introversion and extroversion. So if people just think about that, it's interesting. But again, what an interesting conversation to have with your partner about, let's just talk about this. What do we think we are? Where do we think we stand on? Where are we on these continuums? And then we didn't even, and attached to all of this, which I think you and I might talk about at another time.
Oh, you're coming back.
Yeah, with all these hormones and these different ways of being and these things to talk about. Of course, sex is involved in all of this, like physical and sexual intimacy and the desire for that, and what we desire from intimacy is also driven by this. And again, you don't have to have two people that are the same, but you do need to understand each other and what is driving, what the real drivers of that intimacy are for each other. And that's, you know, that's also an extremely interesting conversation.
That's, and you and I touched on that a little bit before we started talking here. And I said, we have to have you come back and do one on the sex part. Because just the things you were throwing out there at me, it blew my mind. And we have to come back and do this again. But I think this was super helpful. I will tell you that when I did the activator part of the relationships course, and I was seeing a crusader at the time, well, of course, why wouldn't I be on the crusader whisperer, people? But when I opened up that relationship course, and I saw how I am in relationships. Now, the reactivity made me great at law enforcement, quick decisions, very reactive.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me so good in relationships. I say I was a pit viper, right? Think of a snake. We get very critical towards the partner. And I looked back at my past marriages. I'd been married a couple times myself. And looking at that, it just made so much sense to me how I was. And I didn't like that part of me. So it doesn't mean that just because I am created that way to be so reactive that I have to be that way in the relationship. So I have learned how to tailor my behavior, right? And this is the beauty of understanding this. Just because I'm more reactive doesn't mean I have to be in certain situations. And I've learned to say, I need to reflect on that for a second. I don't need to react. I don't like that part of me. So the pit viper has gone to the wayside, which is very nice. But when I started listening to that session or that course, I'm always taking notes, right? I have my notepad, my pen. And in the first 10 minutes, I soaked the page with tears.
Yes.
It was so emotional to understand how it made me great in ways that I served, but it didn't make me great in the one thing that I've wanted was, a relationship.
Yeah.
And it was such an eye-opener. And then also to see how I had tempered myself since childhood, not being myself. And so thank you for creating that. And because, just the power of understanding our creation, we all have parts of us that are going to be strengths, and we all have parts of us that are a weakness. And sometimes it can be the same thing, is a strength in some area, and it was kind of a weakness in another area that you can work with. And that's epigenetics, right? Working your environment, working your lifestyle to have your DNA express the way you want it to express to be optimal, and not just optimal health, optimal mentally, optimal socially, all of that. So I'm so grateful for that and for you putting that course together, because it just became a different part of me. And then I saw the parts of the Crusade and said, I get it. I understand them more, which I think part of this lens, when you're in the dating world, it's a blessing, because I understand. I can look at a profile on an online and I can pretty much figure out. I saw one guy had some type. I love spreadsheets. Ooh, that is a swipe left. that is the brain I am not going to go well with. Right? I was like, ooh, this is a crusader I don't want to be around. When you have up there, one of my favorite things is spreadsheets. Just so you know, people, the activators like detest a spreadsheet. It's too much. Ugh. So it just struck me as funny. But I start looking at different things on there, and I think of it as a blessing to say, hey, guess what? I actually get you. I'm going to get you more than someone else.
Yes.
But yet people say, you're analyzing me. It's not. And I'd say, it's not analyzing you, because once you go through this lens, you can't unsee it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not analyzing someone, it's understanding. But again, some people, I think there's, like you said, there can be triggers. Right. So, and understanding that it could be a trigger for someone. Mm. Saying that maybe you do tend to think future, you do tend to have that very active mind, that may be a trigger to somebody and not get it. So it's kind of that fine line to walk. But I still think when you lead with understanding of another human being, I don't think we can go wrong in the long run.
Yeah, because right? it's only analyzing in the sense that humans have always analyzed each other, right?
Never thought of that.
You know, we've got the Vedas, we've got all the whole Ayurvedic thing with the Vata, Pitta, Kapha. We've got the different symbols in Chinese medicine. We have astrology. Like, human beings have always tried to understand each other in some way. And so it depends how you then use that. But now we've got this tool that is so, well, to me, in my opinion, much more real than anything else. It really, it because it is really based on our biology and therefore our neurobiology. But also, just some people are more available to grow. That's why there's that thing called the growth mindset.
I love that.
Some people want to do that. Like, I would say most of my clients have really enjoyed the experience of my being their therapist. But there was one person I know who actually was a therapist themselves. They used to call me the psycho killer, which is a bit mean. Because I was so confronting to them. It was so confronting. I'm not even really a very confronting person, because I'm a diplomat.
Which no, like. Not at all. That's what made me laugh.
Yeah, we like peace, and we're kind of gentle. We're very other focused. We're very in tune with what the other person is doing and saying, and we don't like to upset people too much, right? So if someone thought I was a psycho killer, they were having some struggles. But that's right. It's just that idea, although sometimes maybe my husband thinks I might be a psycho killer, because he doesn't like to analyze anything, and I do like to think about things. But, you know, I say use it for good, not evil, right? Anyone can use anything in a negative or a positive way. You could use any kind of understanding people to use it against them, to sell them something, whatever. But this is this thing. What's the will? What's the goodwill here? And we know our tech is tech for good, right? It's the goodwill to say, I'm going to have a tendency to be like this. And the more I own that, you know what? Life is going to get a lot easier for me. It's like everything for every diplomat. It's like, oh, you'll always underestimate a schedule. So I laugh at myself all the time. When it comes out of my mouth, this is taking me longer than I thought. Just laugh and go, of course. And actually that actually is okay, because this is part of my biology. And it's not because I'm hopeless or slower. It's because I have a very complex process that comes to this. And I love what you said, that what served you well in the police force, it's awesome in A&E as well. Is that what you call it in the United States, in A&E, accident and emergency?
Oh, first responders.
First responders, or, you know, in the hospitals, in the hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, that's who you want with you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People that can make a quick decision, be reactive in that ER or on that scene. Absolutely. Yeah.
But you're not a different person in each place. It's just that you can learn to modify that in some place, just like I can learn to structure myself to get through things a little bit more quickly or whatever. You know, I can learn to modify my stuff, you know, I try. And just like, well, like say, for instance, modify the fact that I'm married to someone who doesn't want to unpack the past. You know, I used to laugh because I've been married before. I was married to a crusader before, but he was really open to that about, let's talk about the year, like on our birthdays or something. We used to have like, let's talk about what's happened in the last year and like where we're going for the next year. I really liked having that conversation. My husband could not care less about having that conversation. And so I don't feel like that's bad or I'm missing out. I just go, well, it just serves no purpose in this relationship. And he's not doing it because he doesn't love me, because he really, that's probably the last point I need to make. This is the problem with the meaning we make. We think that person's doing that because they don't love me. Or if they love me more, they would do that. They'd pay me more attention, or they'd stop more, or they'd make more money, or they'd exercise more with me, or they'd socialize more with me, or they'd socialize less for me, like whatever, because then that would mean that they love me more. But that is not true. I mean, it might be true for some people. Some people might not love you enough. I don't know. But so much of what I see, when people get this understanding, they go, oh, it's not about how much you value me. You're just very different than me. Even in the course, you know, I do a little swift flick into love languages because those love languages are different. Although words of affirmation is very high. I think it's like 3 out of 6 have words of affirmation. It's just really, even if you have that conversation, you know, that's why those things were useful. Oh, I did the love languages. What does this actually mean for us as a couple? And what you'll start to see is, well, what do I value? Well, I value this, and I value the time you spend with me. Oh, I find it difficult to spend time with you because I'm trying to get on with this.
Right.
Or I like spending time with you when we're exercising together. Not hanging out on the sofa watching a movie. We'll just have that conversation with each other.
So it's just taking it that step further from the basic love language to the other part of the, like, the quality time. What is quality time is going to differ between the different types. Never thought of that.
Yeah, and people say to me, oh, do you know about this thing? You know, there's 10 million personality tests ways of seeing people. Have you heard of that person? No, because there's so many of them. I haven't. But I say, well, you know what I'm interested in? Why does it spark your interest?
Oh,
what
I love
you resonate with that makes you interested in that? That's where the richness of the conversation is. Not just, oh, yeah, what about this? I like that.
I think you have given us so much awesome food for thought. And I think there's going to be a lot of couples and daters out there tonight or today putting some of this stuff into use. I am so grateful for you coming on and having this conversation today. This has been a blast, and we need to get you scheduled to come on again to talk about, let's talk about sex, baby. Yes. That's
going to be, we're both there in the 80s, so we know that song well.
60s. Oh, yeah. Why did they even come up in my head? I don't even know. I could have said I'm bringing sexy back and started singing that, but, you know, That's what it is. Or maybe we'll open that the next show when we come back with I'm Too Sexy. And you can come in and start singing that on your intro.
Okay. Okay. That will be harder for me than you, but I could do that.
So guys, if you want to see Anne back here, I mean, she's coming back regardless, but if you enjoyed this, if you think this is helpful, give me some comments. Let's have some comments and let us know that you can't wait to get her back and talk about the S word and have some more fun conversation. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will be seeing you again soon, my friend. Thank you for tuning into my podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, I'd love for you to share it with someone who'd find the information useful. Please leave a review anywhere you listen to podcasts, and it'll help the information get out to others. If you're interested in seeing if we're a great fit to work together, the link is in the show notes below where you can sign up for a free consultation with me. So go make it a great day and let your authentic self shine.